Thanks very much, Liz. For those people who haven't seen Jeremy Hardy versus the Israeli Army, I didn't win. It was a bit of a one-sided battle. Bless you all for being here. I would say a son of the lightning, but I think George Galloway's rather patented and monopolised that expression, really. But well, I will say a son of the lightning, shalom aleichem, peace be with you, whatever language you choose. One of the things that's quite interesting and exciting about this time, I think, is that people are not coming around to the idea that the war was a good thing. And immediately the war started, people said, well, the war has started now, so the opposition should all be quiet. We should all be quiet and support our brave lads. As though somehow when you see an old lady about to be mugged, you say, no, don't, oh, well, you've started, be gone, get on with it. Finish her off and come home safely, son, we're all proud of you. The fact that the thing has started or finished will not make it right. And there is a huge coalition against this war, and I think it is actually opening people's eyes to what is going on in the world. And it links up with the whole attitude towards capitalism, that nowadays people who used to be quite conservative don't like the world we're in. And they know that it's run by corporate greed, and they know that it's about oil. And this war is about America, and it's about oil. Some people say it's to do with Jewish control, and people say it's all about Jewish money, and I just say, well, what's Jewish money? A dollar bill with the ends nipped off? There's no such thing. Money doesn't have a race or a creed. Money doesn't have ethnicity. Money is just money. America is not run by Jewish people, it is run by right-wing Christians. And so are we, incidentally. I hesitate to call Blair Bush's poodle. I think prison bitch would probably be the most appetite description. It does terrify me that these are people who think we will all go to heaven when we die, because they don't mind that they are increasing the likelihood that we will die. Very much as Ronald Reagan, who just passed, believed that it would be fine to blow the world up because we're all going to heaven. I think Blair and Bush believe the same thing. At least there was a discretion about the days of Reagan and Thatcher. In the old days of the special relationship, the Tories kept a polite fiction that they were just good friends, and she gave this impression that she was just determined to give Reagan long-term lasting care, even though no one had any idea who she was. But the craven, abject relationship between Blair and Bush, I think anybody who considered themselves to be a patriot was found rather humiliating. And I think that there is a huge coalition against the war and against the new face of the world. And I think the peace movement has brought in all kinds of people it wouldn't have brought in before. And one of the fascinating things about, there's a Velcro fetishist in the front row who's doing sound effects, but anyway, that's fine. It's a product of the space race, so that's But the demonstrations that we've had against the war have been fascinating because of the people who've shown up. And of course, the usual suspects are always there. And thank God for the older people, because let's not remember that Bush is of a baby boomer generation. He's not seen war. He grew up reading those books where the enemy dies with the word Arga Himmel appearing in a bubble above their head. The peace movement is dependent upon those people with knitted placards who look like cat weasel. The old people have been fantastic, and there are new old people. Posh old ladies from Buckinghamshire coming to Hyde Park, tumbling off the buses with lots of carrier bags, and now, I've made some petrol bombs. I wasn't quite thinking about them. I've got unleaded, diesel and elderflower, all-star and nettle, that's a bit young. So it's a very exciting time, and it's a very good time in lots of ways, because people have not been convinced, and people know this is not about human rights. People say this is not about extending democracy in Iraq. If that happens, that is collateral benefit. That is tragic but unavoidable progress that sometimes happens in the heat of the world. America does not, has not, and will never attack countries to install goodness and humanity. If a democracy plays ball with America, then fine. If a dictatorship plays ball with America, then fine. America's not bothered, so long, it wants obedience. It doesn't care what your voting system is. And look at our own country. We've got Blair, isn't it? He's given up on everything. He's given up on everything, every justification for the war, except the possible notion that this was done for human rights. Well, how is it then that we've been deporting, or trying to deport Iraqis for many a long year? And the people are noticing now that they're trying to force back Iraqi dissidents to go back and live in their war-torn country. The Iraqi dissidents' asylum claims were being turned down during the war. And before the war, the Home Secretary was Jack Straw. And I've got letters from Jack Straw's office to asylum seekers telling them that if they return to Iraq, they can expect a fair trial under a properly constituted judiciary. So Jack Straw's got two views of Iraq. On the one hand, it's a hellhole where the lives of dissidents were made hell. On the other hand, it was a dandy, a place you'd be a fool to leave. So this was not about human rights. So what was it about? What was it about? Was it about weapons of mass destruction? Well, they found vast underground stocks of a toxic liquid that clings to the skin and suffocates by blocking the pores, and you can run cars in it as well. So that's a good thing. But Iraq has no nuclear weapons. Who's got nuclear weapons? Us, France, America, China, Pakistan, India, Israel. Those are the countries with nuclear weapons. Not Iraq. But chemical weapons. Which country has the most chemical weapons in the world? America. Which country has used them the most often? America. Who else has used them? We have. Depleted uranium is a chemical nuclear weapon which we've used in Kosovo and we used in the previous Gulf War. It's used to harden tank shells. Because you know what tank shells are like ordinarily. It's like a soft kiss of a gossamer wind moth. But with a little depleted uranium on the end, it can knock you over. And so they stick this on, it fragments, it becomes dust, it is ingested, and it has caused hideous birth defects throughout Iraq. And people have pointed this out, and government scientists have said, oh, we can't find the link. Well, bloody look, I can't find the keys, but I know they're in the house. And because the government's line was probably, well, the reason that people in Iraq have been born with no eyes was because Saddam Hussein was hoarding eyes in big warehouses, full of eyes, denying eyes to his own people. That was a measure of the man. And this baffled me because I grew up in Aldershot and there was spent ordnance all over the place and we were at least warned, we were at least told that this stuff is dangerous. Nowadays we've left cluster bombs and depleted uranium all over Southeast Asia, all over former Yugoslavia and all over Iraq, and the government is trying to convince us that these things aren't dangerous. At least when I was a kid we were specifically warned that this stuff was, that we'd go out in the woods and we'd be told, don't pick up anything. The Ministry of Defence didn't say, oh, there's no proven link between bright objects in bracken and boys picking them up. There's a minimal risk from bullets, or mortar shells occur naturally in pencils and salisbury plain, and you have to eat 7 or 8 of them to do yourself any harm. So there are all these lies being spun to us, and the whole war in Iraq, we know, was wanted by the neoconservatives before 9/11. 9/11 was the excuse. But 9/11 generated a madness, and unfortunately in America, because most Americans don't have passports, and I'm not here to insult American people, there are American people here, America has a fantastic peace movement. Most Americans don't have passports, and their newspapers will be the Sarasota Herald, and the first 40 pages will be about Sarasota. Only then will it go federal, and somewhere behind the crosswords will it mention that there is a world outside. Americans are very badly misled, as are we. And Americans still think that that 9/11 was perpetrated by Saddam Hussein, and that's why they support the war. Because nobody's actually told them that this isn't true. There's nothing actually to connect Afghanistan and Iraq. Until America conquers Iran, and then the pipeline will go all the way through. But when 9/11 happened, there was a collective madness, and the government of this country and America capitalized on that. And suddenly Mayor Giuliani became incredibly popular. Even Ken Livingston talked glowingly about Mayor Giuliani because of the way he conducted himself so well on the day of 9/11 in front of the cameras. Well, what did anyone think he would do? He was the mayor. He wasn't going to turn up on television wearing a shit happens t-shirt. What are you going to do? Forget about it, they're gone. It's all right, I don't think about it. And we see the same thing this weekend, the D-Day celebrations, where the government has tried to use D-Day, which was at the time when I think many of us were moved, and we thought, well, those old guys did fight for freedom, and they did fight to bring down the dictator and bring peace and justice and democracy to Europe. And we did maybe not feel pride, but at least thought, well, maybe we hadn't thought enough about those old guys who did fight in the Second World War in particular. But of course, Blair tried to enlist this to make us feel good about what's happened in Iraq, and which is a deeply, deeply sick thing. Because you look at 9/11, and this has been stolen as a justification for what happened to Iraq. The plans were already laid, but the decision was made to take it. They had a perfunctory go at Afghanistan, took the Taliban out, which wasn't hard, and then installed the Northern Alliance just to ensure the supply of heroin to our Council of States. Oil isn't the only thing that fuels our economies, to be honest. But 9/11, there was a madness. And you look at 9/11, yes, it was an appalling atrocity, and nobody should pretend it wasn't. And there are sections of the left who have come up with some very wild conspiracy theories. One is that George Bush actually was responsible for 9/11 directly. And I'm sorry, I don't go with that one. I mean, 9/11 was a skilled operation using Stanley knives. And we all know that George Bush isn't allowed to hold the sharp things. In the same way, people who support the war say, well, there must be some weapons of mass destruction because the politicians must know something, and they're not allowed to tell us that it's intelligence reports. They must know something that we don't know. I'm sorry. I refuse to believe there is anything that George Bush knows that I can't. How to hold a spoon and use the laboratory. I've mastered all of those things. But after 9/11, there was this madness. And you look at 9/11 and think, yes, that was an appalling atrocity. But between 2,000 and 3,000 people died that day in New York. Between 11,000 and 12,000 Americans are shot dead every year by other Americans. Now, the National Rifle Association gleefully points out that a far greater number of Americans shoot themselves dead. But I'm bound to ask, in a country where people take solace from those statistics, why wouldn't you shoot yourself? But the fear of terror is so very useful to politicians. Particularly politicians of the right, and of course has been used by Stalinist politicians, fear of terror. And they started talking about a war against terrorism, and then they talk about a war on terror. And at least terrorism is actually an activity. Terror is merely an emotion. It's like having a war on a midlife crisis or teenagers. It's the most nebulous kind of 1984 Newspeak idea of a war. A war on terror. Something we can all agree we're frightened of. Terror. And of course, it's an advantage to Sharon. And Sharon has thrived on the suicide bombings. And one of the many arguments against the suicide bombings that have been used by the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, the Islamic Jihad and Hamas, is that they have massively helped terror of Sharon. He thrives. He would not be in power. He's delighted when a suicide bomb goes off. It helps him. And our government thrives on terror. The American government thrives on the idea that somehow, some Islamic fundamentalist is going to blow up the local 7-Eleven in the middle of Iowa. And in this country, the police, of course, routinely, periodically, arrest some people to keep the pot boiling, to keep us afraid that there are all these people around, and they'll arrest somebody who's kind of North African, or maybe a Muslim, or just, there's a falafel somewhere in their house. The police will be there, it'll be all over the papers, big splash, and then over the weeks they will be released as the police realise there's no evidence against them. Now, at least this is progress. In the old days, with Irish people, this would take 18, 19 years. Nowadays, with computers, they can turn it around in a matter of weeks, and we should be glad of that. Because what happened to all these people who were busted by the police over the last 2 years as suspected terrorists and armies? They were all released because none of them had done anything. And there'd been this big surge of publicity on the news. They found that the flat was a map of London and replica weapons. And you knew that it was Monopoly and Cluedo. And then they go into this reverie of all the crimes that they have averted by arresting those people, saying, found that the flat was an envelope on which was stuck a picture of the Queen in profile. Police believe the picture could have been used to identify Her Majesty the Queen, and the perforated edges to soar through the gates of Buckingham Palace to allow a special rocket-launching tank to enter the playground and assassinate the Queen while she eats her breakfast using a new kind of porridge-seeking missile that could be only days away from being invented. And the BNP has seized on this. In towns like Burnley, the tragic thing about Burnley is we on the left imagine that it's the dispossessed poor who are falling into the hands of the BNP in the north of England. Because we think, oh, they're all really poor up there, aren't they, in the north? It's since the old fish mind skills. It is not the dispossessed, the lump and pork. It's the lower middle class, it is the patiophalangists, the vain male wings, the Tim Henman fans of Burma. You live in fear that some Islamist is going to take away their patio doors and their one tiny share. I'm so worried about it always anthrax. And you think, what do you know about anthrax? 2 years ago, you thought anthrax was posh charity paper. Only dangerous as it can strangle a puppy. And ricin, ooh, there's always ricin. You say, well, what is ricin? He said, well, anything foreign's got ricin, isn't it? And you've got to just finish it and know that. Ricin. Ricin is a solvent derived from the castor bean. It's poisonous to the extent you would inject it, you'd die by injecting it into your blood. You would die if I injected something alive into your blood. Ricin is used by people forging documents. And most of the people that police have busted are people known to them as asylum seekers. And people say, well, that's terrible. That's terrible. They shouldn't have forged documents. That's against the law. If you are an asylum, if you are a refugee, you are supposed to have forged documents. Surely, if you are escaping from one place to another, you've seen a war film. Escape committee presses into service a former tailor who can mock up the garb of a Spanish priest using any potato peelings and sand. Chocolate from Red Cross parcels is melted and molded into dummy passports. But this government criminalises people for having forged paperwork. If it generates an idea that there is an enemy among us, they're basically kind of asylum seekers, they're basically kind of North African, Middle Eastern, foreign, and they are basically Muslims. And Islamophobia, as many people said, is the new respectable face of racism. Islam is the new Judaism, this scary global religion that's disloyal and is all over Europe and all our countries. And all of the fascist parties in Europe are concentrating on this now. They pull back on the anti-Semitism because they realise that it's not going anywhere. It's not, people aren't going with it, but they're working on the anti-Semitism and on the anti-Islamic fear, the Islamophobia, and so all of this has happened. All of this has happened has created misery for Muslims in our community. It's helped the extreme right. Fragmenting our society, it is keeping government in power on the basis that we have to have all our civil liberties taken away, because if we don't, we will just be enslaved by terrorists. And since the IRA ceasefire was called, governments have been scratching their heads looking for somebody to pin it on. How can we justify the fact that since Thatcher, all of our civil liberties have been taken away, Jack Straw being worse than Michael Howard, if that were possible. And let's not forget that Tony Blair was Michael Howard's shadow. I mean, you wouldn't think Michael Howard was the sort of person that had a shadow. But Tony Blair was there when the criminal justice bill was an absolutely appalling job. And I think actually Mo Mullen was the shadow at that point. But so the effects of this have reverberated through our society. And of course the effects on the people of Iraq have been appalling. There is always this argument that the warmongers come out with. When many of us here would work against the war on Afghanistan, against the war on Yugoslavia. I mean, we've got new people in our midst, new recruits who actually supported the war on Yugoslavia, but happily admit that there are people who thought somehow that was going to be progressive. And the argument they always come up with the warmongers is, well, what's your alternative? This is their new logic. Whenever you say I'm against the war, they say, well, what's your alternative? As though somehow those of us who favour peace have to provide an alternative to war. Have to provide them with some other form of entertainment that will satisfy their bloodlust. And you say to them, look, I was against this war because it had nothing to do with human rights. It was about global reach, it was about America extending its power at a time that the Saudi regime is collapsing and it needs to secure the supply of oil, and it was about America just stamping its footprint on the Middle East and keeping power. And I was against the war because it involved the death of civilians, and who has the right to arbitrarily decide that another human being's life is expendable in the furtherance of their own political agenda? And they say, well, what's your alternative? This, you can no longer argue. You can come down in the night and find your loved one forcing the television into their rectum. And you say, well, what are you doing? They say, well, what's your alternative? Maybe the fish bowl is smoother. And then you get these columnists saying, well, we have to do something. We think, what do you mean we? We didn't do anything. Newspaper colonists didn't do anything in the war. The war was fought by lads from Newcastle and Liverpool and Manchester and Sheffield. And this is the tragedy. You see all these lads in full kit before a war, standing around in the desert with no idea where they are, who they're fighting or why, all being interviewed on the news that, well, the kid they get stuck in because the war got a job to do. You think, no, you haven't, that's why you joined the army. But you read these people in the newspapers and they say, well, I supported the war because I, for one, could not sit idly by. And you think, yes, you can, because you're a newspaper columnist. Sitting idly by is what you do. You wanted thousands of people to die to make you feel better. So do I, at least I've got a list. Most of the people on it are newspaper columnists. Anyway, I'm going to sit down, but I would say that I think this is a fantastic initiative. I think it's brilliant there are so many people here, especially with so many other meetings going on, election meetings and so forth. I think that we have to keep our eye on this. And one of the things that's happened, and I heard an Iraqi speak before the war started, and he was saying that we're really glad that you people are campaigning against this war, because it could still happen, but America and Britain know, next time they try and do this, anywhere in the world, it won't be an easy ride for them. There will be massive demonstrations in every major city, and governments will fall, as has happened in Madrid, and I wouldn't wish that terrible thing on anybody, but I just hope that if it happens here, that we can end up with a socialist government as well. But I think that one thing that you and I are all doing here tonight is making it much harder. And although we couldn't stop this war, and this will happen, and this war is still going on, and will go on for a very long time, one thing we have guaranteed is the next time that an American president gets to the British Prime Minister in the headlock and says, this is what we're going to do, we're going to start a war on somebody, they'll have to think twice about it, because they know that the opposition is growing at home. Thank you.